Can you say your name?
Henry P. Canclini.
And what day is it today?
This date?
Yeah.
Today? What is it? The 22nd? 23rd of September? 1918, huh? 2018. 23rd? 23rd? Yeah.
16th.
16th,
I think.
I guess
I'm
looking at the wrong month.
Okay. And we're recording this interview in Diamond Springs.
Where was it living?
Yeah, we're in Diamond
Mendocino City then.
Well, okay. Here it is. Yeah. So, yeah, where were you living when you decided to join the Navy, and how did that happen?
I didn't decide. I was drafted.
How old were you? How old were you?
I was 18.
You decided to go to UCLA?
No. Then? I was inducted. I went through boot camp in San Diego. And I was selected for OCS, a class of 185 that went up to University of Redlands. So I spent a year and a half there, and then I was transferred to UCLA as a cadet. You weren't any close to an OCS, really, at Redlands. You had to earn it. So I think there was one or two people that were selected out of that class to go to UCLA, and I was one of them. And we were told that when we were commissioned, we were going to be in command of the landing craft, one of those carrying 60, 70, 80 troops at a time going ashore. So that was going to be our command we had. But the war was over, so I was discharged before we ever needed to invade Japan.
What year was it that you began at Redlands, and then when did you move to UCLA?
What's that?
What year was it when you were at Redlands?
44. Yeah, part 43, 44. When was the war over? 46, 47. I graduated from San Jose State in 49.
That was after you got out of the Navy?
Yeah, I got out of the Navy. Spent some time before I went back to school. And I spent a year out at least before I went back to school. I decided on San Jose State. Don't ask me why, but I did. I had to decide whether I wanted to play football or whether I wanted to go ahead and get my degree, because I played some football for the University of Redlands.
Mm-hmm. What position?
As an offensive tackle.
Oh, yeah?
210 pounds. But we didn't play very high-caliber schools. We just swept through them. I mean, they were just like, I don't know, some of the smaller schools down there in Southern California. But had two little All-Americans on the team. And then when I was in the service, my parents got a notice if I wanted to go back to Redlands or not. And they said, well, we don't know. So they didn't save a place for me, so that knocked football out for me if I wanted to play football, because it would have meant that I was spent better than 3 years if I wanted to play football. And I would have gone out for as a linebacker. That was my position. I had Paul Reinhardt, who played for USC before he came into the Navy program. He said I hit as hard as any 250-pounder he ever played against. So that's why I could ball, I could roll those guys over. I guess I hit them hard enough. But that was a typical weight then. If you weighed 250 pounds, you were an interior lineman. Mm-hmm. When I left UCLA, there was only the two or three that transferred to UCLA, and the other 30 or so were still in Redlands, and they directly booted them out of the Navy. They put me on a ship for a while, which was great. I got to see a few countries and traveled a little bit, but. No.
Where'd you go? Where'd you go?
Oh, we went through the Philippines, straight to Juan de Fuco, and then we crossed the international date line into Japan, Nokosuke, Japan. And that's where all of the facilities for tying up were all intact yet on the port. You go back 100 yards, it was total devastation. Every factory was flattened. Everything was flattened. Every building was flattened. There was nothing there that they could use, except they left the water front capable for us using it and tying up. They knew that we were probably going to use it when we landed. We had to have a place in order to come in. And there was enough room and enough road transportation that they could divert supplies. You know, if you had a good port, you could come into. Mm-hmm. And I think I told you, when we came into Tokyo Bay, they had rock in settlements maybe two times the size of this house, and there was cannons sticking out of those rock emplacements, and every one of them was smashed. They were gone. They destroyed. That's how precision bombing was even then. Those cannons were sticking up out of the rocks like that. You could see them.
So there are similar emplacements in Okinawa, in the caves there that we'd see.
Oh. Yeah.
What year was that?
Oh, let's see. Had to be about 45. Graduated from San Jose State, 49, 47, 46, yeah, 45,
44, 45. What did they have you doing there in Japan?
In Japan?
Yeah.
Oh, I only spent about 4 hours in Japan, went ashore one time. And I went ashore and I picked up about a half a dozen packages of cigarettes, stuck them in my waistband. Because they were better than money. Yeah, what do you give me for this? So take it, whatever you want. Anyway, I went into this one store and I bought some silk, I think it was. And then I went up to him and says, "Well, how much money? Oh, he says about 2 bits. He was a graduate from UCLA and got caught in the war over there. 2 bits, 25 cents
okay.
For whatever I bought.
Where'd you go after you left port in Japan?
After what?
After you left the port in Japan. Where'd you go after that?
Well, we took on 500 troops, and we headed, this was in around the end of November, and the skipper went too far north, and we went full blast into a typhoon. That's when I told you we had anemometers that were knocked out at 125 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I've got pictures where the bow is up in the air like that and then comes down and slams, and you can hear the propeller vibrating in the back of that ship. And I think I told you that one day we lost 60 nautical miles, drove us back 60 nautical miles. And it was horrible. If we had to have ropes to hang on to in order to walk on deck any place. And the fantail, actually, I saw it visually myself, because a troop transport is huge. It's almost as long as a football field. You know that? It took water over the fantail.
That's crazy.
Crazy, yeah.
Did you go to Hawaii after that?
No, we came in to Bremerton, Washington.
That's right.
We swung north and came up and kept going. We swung into Bremerton, Washington. We were knocked out of all communications for either 13, 14, or 15 days. They had no communication whatsoever with us, no radio, nothing. And so they might have thought we were lost, for all I know. We were a riveted, welded ship. So that's one of the reasons why we didn't break in half, probably. It took a terrible beating. The after compartment was completely flooded when they came in for repairs and into Bremerton. And finally, we broke through and we came into the entrance to, what is that, inlet into Washington. You should know.
Is that Bangor?
Huh?
Bangor?
We went into the Bremerton repair yard anyway.
Okay.
And while we were going in there, it was about 6 o'clock at night, I had a crew standing by to tie up. It was the coldest night I have ever spent in my life. I had clothes underneath, a big fur-lined Navy jacket, and I could not stay warm. It was that cold. So finally the skipper came on. He says, "Gentlemen, I just wanted to tell you, I don't know if you know what date this is, but this is Christmas Eve." So we finally made land, and we're safe on Christmas Eve. That was it. So,
where'd you go from there?
Well, we spent about close to 2 months for repairs, and then that would put us into March, maybe, and I think that we may have made a trip to the Philippines, came back. I was told to go to Fort Roberts, and on July 5th, I got discharged. Yeah, so that was it. Stayed around and worked for the Bank of America for, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, 10 months. And then my uncle came by and says, "Hey, I need a partner in the woods, fallen timber." And I was making $200 a month for working for Bank of America at that time, which is actually peanuts even then. So then I went up to the manager and says, "I'm quitting." He says, "You're quitting?" I says, "Why are you quitting?" "I'm not getting ahead fast enough, making enough money." He says, "We'll transfer you to San Francisco tomorrow in our teller program." I says, "You're a day late and a dollar short." So,
how much would you make logging then?
Huh?
How much would you make cutting down trees?
Oh, we would, at that time, we were making $100 to $125 a day. A lot of difference, but it's seasonal, dangerous, and but it was a good move.
What was your? Do you remember your rate in the Navy?
Hmm.
Your specialty.
When I was going to, when I was at Redlands, I was in command of, it would be about 90 cadets, marching them to chow and marking them to formation, and all the drills. I was in command of those for teaching them how to make their turns, right turn, left turn, back turn, first squad to the rear, first squad to the left, so forth. And then for inspection, I was in charge of bringing them up and presenting them to the chief inspector, whoever it was. He was probably he was pretty high up in the Navy, not an admiral, but, and then you would say, such and such, what were we? We were probably, we were bigger than a platoon. How big is a platoon?
About 40.
Oh, no, we had a lot. It was about 90. So I would probably say something like, University of Redlands, OCS, ready for inspection. Then they go down through and inspect, and you'd follow them, and then either dismissed you, or else we were kept in for the weekend if we didn't pass inspection. So.
Did you do that at UCLA also?
No, did not. No, I did not. At UCLA, they made me go through a curriculum of 22 and a half units.
Each semester?
The ordinary is 15 units.
Yeah.
22 and a half units. I was able to select the business classes I wanted. I had four of them, and I got A's in all of those. And the worst was navigation. I just couldn't catch on to that.
I never liked it either.
Yeah. But the rest of the all the business classes, probably if you took all my business classes, I had right at a 4.0, if not a 4.0. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
Did you get to choose your specialty in the Navy coming out from UCLA going to?
I went to work for a bank right after. Well, let's see. No, I went to bank after I graduated from San Jose State. Yeah, I let's see. What did I do? I forgot what I did afterwards. Oh, I worked for another fella. And we were independent doing concrete work and had a great, great business. But he had bad ulcer problem. He had to quit, so then I had to do something else. But that's what I was doing directly after coming out of the Navy, Walt. I went to work. We went to work together doing cement work, heavy work. Boy, it was profitable.
That was before working at Bank of America.
Well, Bank of America, I worked after I graduated from San Jose State.
Okay.
That was my first job after graduating from State.
So you went from, you started off at University of Redlands.
UCLA.
And then you went to UCLA.
And then graduated from San Jose State.
But you went into the Navy from UCLA.
No. I was promoted from the class at the University of Redlands to UCLA.
Okay.
There was only a couple of us that were promoted out of that group.
Okay.
We were the ones they were looking for to commission eventually if they needed to invade Japan.
Got it.
So, and the rest of them, they just discharged them, period. As soon as the war was over, just a few months after it was over, they discharged them.
Okay, so did you go to Japan then before you went to Redlands?
No. I went through boot camp and then I was selected. I went before a board when I was there at the Naval Training Station, and it was 11 admirals on that board asking you questions. And one of the questions they asked me is, are you a Republican or Democrat? I said, I'm a Republican. well, we're all Democrats. Well, then I said, I must be in trouble. Got selected.
When did you go to the Philippines then?
One of the times, I think it was after we finished going into that typhoon, and we got back, and we got repairs, and we made a short trip. I think we made that short trip into the Philippines and back. Got back, I forget where I think we tied up in the Bay Area, we did. And then I was told to go to Fort Ord, is it? Yeah. Yeah, Fort Ord, and I was discharged from Fort Ord.
Fort Roberts.
Huh?
Camp Roberts.
Camp Roberts. Camp Roberts, yeah. That was it. Man, the lines for chow at Camp Roberts, it might be a mile long if you had to wait for chow sometimes down there. Mm-hmm. Just get in line, just wait and wait and wait and wait. It was horrible.
That was in Washington?
No, California, Fort Roberts. Where is it, Judy?
North of Paso Robles.
Yeah. Down below on
close to San Luis Obispo.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. They got something there yet. I don't think it's military, but they got something there at Fort Roberts. But it was a horrible to just wait and wait and wait. All you did was stand in line and wait. No, I was graduated from high school. I registered and I was drafted by the draft board. Went up to Fort Bragg, got on a Greyhound bus, and they took us to San Francisco. Got a medical there, and then they interviewed us for what you were qualified for. And I said, gunnery officer or something like that. She said, oh no, we're going to put you in an OCS class. So that's why I went to Redlands. Then spent about a year and a half in Redlands. And then evidently they must have had a need. They figured they're going to have a need for more commissioned officers, because it was either two or three of us out of what was left was transferred to UCLA. And on my discharge papers, it shows I was discharged from the University of Redlands, and it had some kind of title, not a very high title, but it said Naval Cadet when I was transferred to UCLA, which was a pretty large advancement. Mm-hmm. Got to wear khaki. Yeah, didn't have to wear the regular Navy uniform. It was all khaki. Mm. Was there, and then they started transferring people out of the program, and I think about 40 days, I was transferred to a troop transport, and spent time there. I must have spent 8 or 9, maybe 10 months, that's all, on that troop transport. But it was a pretty eventful tour going through that typhoon.
Yeah. Were you an ensign when you were on the transport?
No, just a seaman.
Seaman?
Yeah. No. Nope. So. And they started releasing people in a hurry, getting them out of the service. There was no need to keep us. Yeah, I forget. Yeah, I went to work for Walt. We were doing concrete work. Boy, we had more work than we could. 'Cause he had ulcers, so he'd have to take a rest every once in a while from his ulcers. And Yeah. Had a lot of dinners with him. His wife would invite me down for dinner. When I was there at Mendocino for a while, there was a group of people said, "We want you to run for supervisor, Mendocino, from Mendocino." I said, "No, I don't want to run. I don't want anything to do with politics right now." But I got asked twice to run for supervisor in the county. What?
You were young.
Yeah, when I was at Mendocino, I was back out of, I graduated from San Jose State. I formed and grew an American Legion post in Mendocino.
Really?
And then I moved away, and about 30 years later, it just folded because there wasn't enough interest. But we had a great post going. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of community activities and a lot of the people that signed up. So we had a good post. And the Legion wanted me to run as one of their area representatives. As a matter of fact, I think I might have been an area representative for a short period of time. But they were looking at making me a national officer in the American Legion. And then I didn't do that. Instead, I went to work for the church. I can remember Fort Bragg First Baptist Church. I just got back from the honeymoon, and on the first week into the new year, the chief of police of Fort Bragg says, "Hank, you're teaching the young people this week." He didn't ask me, he told me. He said, "You're teaching the young people." And I taught Sunday school from that time on, every year someplace, till about, 5 years ago. I taught more different classes than you can imagine. Men's Bible Club Fellowship was one of the best. I had about 12, 15 men. Men's Bible Study Fellowship is a Bible study, a terrific Bible study. And I was one of the leaders in that. And every week I had to call my men, every week. And so I had a binder. And that binder, I could fill up 2 or 3 pages easily when speaking to one of these men. Their problems, what questions they might ask, and it was great. I really enjoyed the men's Bible. 5 years I spent with teaching men's Bible study fellowship. One other year I had senior ladies that wanted to study in Isaiah. So we went through all of Isaiah. I finished Isaiah, I said, "Wow, I don't have to study any more in Isaiah," because it took a lot of studying. They said, "No, we want you to teach it again one another year. Go through Isaiah again." I said, "No, I'm not going through Isaiah again."
What's been the most impactful book of the Bible to you?
Hmm?
What book of the Bible has been the most impactful to you?
Well, Ruth was the one that I started going to church in Fort Bragg. The pastor in Fort Bragg, believe it or not, was in the same program in Redlands I was in, Leo Reed. Yeah, we became very, very close friends. And until he was a pastor there in Fort Bragg. And then he was transferred to a church in Idaho. What was the town in Idaho? And he spent, must have been close to 40 years as pastor, 35, 40 years as pastor in Idaho. So, yep, that's some of the tales. You don't want all that garbage.
Oh, no. Hold on, let's see. About 15 minutes left on it.
what happened. We're going through that typhoon. Bunk directly below me was a young kid. He had to be 17 years old, 16 years old. He just out of Gravel Switch, Kentucky. Billy Smith. And we're going through that typhoon, and man, we just go like this. He says, "Hank, don't you think we had better put our life jackets on?" I says, "Billy," I says, "a life jacket's not going to do as much good. And besides, we're going to make it, you know." And so when we ended, he said, "Hank, if you ever come to Kentucky, Gravel Switch, Kentucky, please look me up." When was it? About a year ago, a little over a year ago. We got on the internet, and we got Gravel Switch, Kentucky, and Billy Smith is still alive in Gravel Switch, Kentucky. Yeah.
Did you visit him?
Huh?
Did you call him?
No. I've never called him. But we had the one chance to go see him that one time we went through pretty close, and we didn't do it. And so, yeah. Billy Smith. Kid was just scared to death. Just, he got to put that life jacket on. 60-foot swells out there, you want to put the life jacket on. Yep. I got, Janelle's got all the pictures of the typhoon, went through the typhoon. But the worst shot was when I was back there when the water, a foot of water came over the fantail. That ship had to be just like that. Yeah. Yeah, it was a good experience. Yeah. Paid for a lot of my education. We didn't pay for everything. GI Bill did not pay. It paid for your books and your tuition. The rest was on you. And there was many and many a day. For 3 days, all I had was peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Didn't have enough money to buy any food to eat other than that peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So that's the difference between a lot of kids today and what they were back then. Those, you know, they say that class that went through the military is the greatest class that ever hit the United States. World War II vets. So. Yeah. Down to the rifle range. And so when I got up there, I was fortunate. The sergeant in charge says, "Well, here's a brand new rifle you can use. It's better than some of these old rifles." And so I had never fired on a rifle range before. I came in second of the 250. You know who beat me? It was an Indian boy out of Arizona. He was a better shot than I was. And I just had to take my time and figure out, well, now, you know, you're sighting and you're down in a squat position, or you're standing, all the different positions. And I just kind of figured it out. I didn't want to squeeze too early on any of those rounds. And so when I was coming down like this, I'd wait till just before I hit that line on that target before I'd squeeze off the, and it worked. Oh, one other thing is that we were at sea and spotted a mine off to the port side. No, starboard side. Starboard is right, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this officer says, "Well, get a rifle. We're going to sink that." going to sink that mine. And so he fired 10, 12, 15 shots, never came close to that mine. So I got down in between the railing and the scuppers. I was rested, and I got in motion with the ship, you know, up and down, up and down. I squeezed off about three rounds. And the fourth round, I started hitting that mine. You could see the metal flying. And I sank it. And the one of the officers, I understand one of the officers in Chow that night said, well, we got one of the best shots in the Navy in our ship. But I sunk it. It was an M1. Right in between on a ship, they call the scuppers, there's holes, and I got up close enough that I was back from it and I could still sight and find that mine and get in motion with the ship and then make sure that you fired off when you were in motion with the ship. So you notice I didn't say boat.
That's for some mariners.
Huh?
That's what they call submarines.
Boats?
They call them boats. Don't ask me why.
No. If you called a rifle a gun, you got punished.
Yeah.
Well, you did too.
Yeah, we can't do that.
Huh?
We call them rifles.
Yeah, you had to.
Yeah. Or your weapon. Just say weapon. You just call it your weapon.
Weapon?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you had different terminology. But I knew to never call a rifle a gun because they'd jump down your neck in a hurry, even to the Navy. Hmm. So, that's some of the experiences. San Francisco Bay, and from San Diego to San Francisco, I got deathly seasick. I mean seasick. Man, that is the worst. I don't know if you've ever been seasick. I
have.
You have?
It's awful.
Yeah. And you're fine as long as you're laying down.
Mm-hmm.
When you get up, oh man, you're sick. And I was close enough I could smell some of the smells from the gallery. And that was even worse.
Yeah.
Oh. You don't eat. And pretty soon there's nothing to heave. You got green. I don't know what it is. It's green. Finally comes up. Yep, you're sick.
It doesn't go away when you throw everything up. Like, you just stay sick, even if you have nothing else to heave up.
No, it doesn't.
It just stays.
No. So you get off duty, and you flop down on your bunk, and you stay there as long as you can. You don't even eat. I didn't even eat for a few days. It was so bad. Because I'd throw it up immediately if I did. But, you know, during that typhoon, I never got sick, not one bit.
Really?
And there were some of the older seamen there, they did get sick when they hit that typhoon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You can't hardly sleep. You have to be so tired that you can lay down any place. As a matter of fact, I had a duty crew, and I forget whether it was when I was coming into Bremerton. I was so sleepy, I found me a hatch, and I crawled in there and went to sleep where I could hide. Oh, just drop off. Well, you go 30, 35 hours without any sleep. I mean, You might catch a little bit in between. You probably did the same thing.
Yeah. I'd sleep in my closet.
Huh?
At school. I slept in my closet.
Your closet?
Yeah. I get my laundry and put it in a bag and use it as a pillow.
As a pillow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Man, you turn green, you heave so much. And it doesn't go away right away, I'll tell you. Finally got a little better, but then eventually you get over it. Coming back was fine. I wasn't sick coming back. But that trip into San Diego, from San Diego to San Francisco, that was horrible. They had a green crew, some of the... I didn't spend many days in boot camp. Maybe 6 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. They wanted to ship us out.
Yeah.
So. You did boot camp in San Diego?
Mm-hmm. Camp Pendleton? No.
Pendleton's there.
Oh.
That's the Marine base, though.
Yeah. We got a few days off. Between me and where we had to go, but you had to be able to swim. And I couldn't swim, so I taught myself enough to swim the length of that pool, so I could get my days off and go home.
Why would you have to be able to swim?
Huh?
Why did you have to know how to swim?
Why they didn't teach me?
Why was that a requirement?
That's the Navy for you. Don't ask me. They wanted to know you could swim if you got tossed over.
Yeah, okay.
The ship. One other experience, yeah, I had this Santa Cruz Island. They bottled us up, took out Santa Cruz Island, and they had a 30-foot pier. And you had to climb to the top of the pier, and they had set gasoline fire all around that pier. And you had to jump into the fire. And did you have that?
No.
That's simple, because all you have to do is do that and the fire is just dispersed from around you. So just
okay.
Do this.
Was that to simulate a ship sinking?
Yeah, abandoning a ship.
Yeah.
It was 30-foot tower. I mean, that's a long ways
that's
down.
That's huge.
Yeah. And you hit that water, and you had to make sure you had your life jacket down securely, otherwise it'd break your neck
mm-hmm.
when you hit the water.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we had chlorine tests, gas tests.
Mm-hmm.
They threw a bottle of gas out there, and you had to be able to put that gas mask on before it got to you.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to take a little whiff. You ever take a whiff of chlorine gas?
Yeah, they make you...
Real sweet.
It's awful.
Yeah.
Was that Santa Cruz Island or was that Catalina Island?
Yeah, it might have been Catalina. Not Santa Cruz, Catalina. Anyway, they had a training facility there. And, they took us over in the morning and brought us back that night. And there were a lot of kids who were just absolutely screaming instead of jumping off of that tower. One of the other tricks they did is the pool in the gym. They had braided, what is it for when you throw over the side if you have to climb up into the ship.
Oh, like the net?
Net, yeah. Had to climb to the top beam of that swimming pool and then jump off into the pool.
Mm-hmm.
We did that a lot of times. In case you had to. But that tower in Catalina Island, that was something. 30 feet's a long time to drop. And boy, you hit, let me tell you, you hit with an impact.
Did you wear, boots or anything while you did that?
No,